Sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. No short.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. On today's show, you'll hear about the attack on independent media and the propaganda that you're fed on a daily basis. The only way the deep state can get away with and justify sending troops or proxy armies to Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya, Syria, attacking, destroying, and occupying these countries is to keep you misinformed about what's really going on, and to keep you fearing Islamic terrorists. An independent media is the only thing standing between the deep state and total control of the information you hear. It's common knowledge that the government and corporate media and some alternative media lied to us about Iraq in 2003 to justify our invasion of that country. If you listen to this program somewhat regularly, then you know how the government and corporate media and some alternative media outlets have been misleading you on what really happened on 9/11 and many, many of the other orchestrated false flag terrorist attacks. This is not the first time that governments have used orchestrated terrorist attacks to mold public opinion. I encourage you to look up Operation Gladio, where U.S.-controlled NATO and other governments were behind the terrorist attacks in Europe in the 70s and 80s, killing innocent people and blaming it on the communists. As more and more people become aware of what's really going on, the deep state players are getting worried that their program of serial, orchestrated, false flag terrorist attacks by Muslim terrorists such as ISIS, whom they control, to further their agenda of full-spectrum dominance of the world, is being exposed. More and more people don't believe the deep state corporate media and some alternative media outlets. The powers that be are losing control of the message. So first they came up with the term fake news to discredit alternative news outlets that expose their misinformation. I don't think it's working so well for them. So now they're trying to control the internet and alternative radio stations and what you can watch and hear. On today's show, you'll hear about this attack on the independent media and the internet. And you'll also hear some examples of truth versus propaganda. So let's begin with James Corbett on the GRTV Backgrounder, which is produced at globalresearch.ca, with Michelle Chusudovsky, also of the website globalresearch.ca, discussing the war on the independent media.
In the wake of London and Manchester, politicians around the world are trying to convince the public that the free flow of information on the internet is a terror threat. In reality, independent online media are exposing the real terrorists, the politicians and their deep state handlers who are funding, arming, aiding, and enabling false flag terror. Within hours of the bombing at Manchester Arena last month, police had identified the lone wolf suicide bomber they alleged was behind the attack. Mere hours after that, the independent online media had compiled a list of the many questions and problems with the official narrative of the event. That it was American intelligence, not British intel, who had allegedly identified Salman Abedi as the attacker. That the alleged bomber's father had co-founded the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group that worked with MI6 on a failed plot to assassinate Gaddafi in the 1990s and fought alongside NATO in his eventual ouster in 2011. And that Abedi's ties to ISIS were allegedly confirmed to the New York Times by two anonymous deep state sources. Within hours of the London attack last week, it was widely reported in the mainstream media as an ISIS-connected event. It was left to the independent media to report that the alleged ISIS connection to the plot was discovered by suspected Israeli operative Rita Katz of the long-discredited Site Intelligence Group, and that it is in fact the UK, the US, and their allies that have been instrumental in funding, arming, and training ISIS in the first place. When CNN tried to pass off a demonstration in London as a spontaneous event that their cameras happened upon, it was a citizen journalist who captured the behind-the-scenes footage showing that the protest was a carefully stage-managed event, including the reporter and crew telling people where and how to line up for maximum effect. When NBC tweeted Megyn Kelly's recent interview with Russian President Vladimir Putin under the headline, "Putin does not deny having compromising information on President Trump," it was online backlash that prompted them to issue a correction, admitting that Putin not only dismissed the idea, but called it nonsense. Time and again, the flowering of citizen journalism and online independent media has thwarted the establishment media in their attempts to convey a narrative favorable to the deep state. So it is no surprise, then, that in the wake of the latest false flag terror incidents in the UK, that British Prime Minister Theresa May has identified the free and open intranet as the greatest facilitator of terrorism.
Second, we cannot allow this ideology the safe space it needs to breed. Yet that is precisely what the internet and the big companies that provide internet-based services provide. We need to work with allied democratic governments to reach international agreements that regulate cyberspace to prevent the spread of extremist and terrorism planning. And we need to do everything we can at home to reduce the risks of extremism online.
The UK government has already implemented some of the most draconian restrictions on internet usage of any country in the Western world, including the Investigatory Powers Act, which requires internet service providers to store all internet users' data for at least 12 months in case the government wants to access it, and the Snoopers Charter, which grants government agencies and intelligence services the authority to hack into individuals' computer systems and the ability to collect masses of data on people's internet browsing history, regardless of whether they are even suspected of a crime. Now, the government is looking to prevent any form of encryption and enforce government-mandated backdoors into any form of online security. What is especially chilling about this is not merely that such a system is fundamentally unworkable, nor that network-level blocking has repeatedly been ruled illegal, nor that such legislation would decimate Britain's software industry. The truly chilling part is that the government is now openly advocating for the creation of a controlled, surveilled, restricted internet where all content is accessible only by permission of the government. The threat of this type of Orwellian control over information is evident for those, like Professor Michelle Chosadovsky of globalresearch.ca, who recognize that the ability to counteract the establishment propaganda narrative is the only thing that will effectively undermine the ongoing and ever-escalating wars of aggression that are justified on the backs of these false flag terror events.
The legitimacy of this military and economic agenda ultimately relies on propaganda. Without propaganda, they have no leg to stand on. Without the war on terrorism, which is a legend, it's a legend because the terrorists are a creation of U.S. intelligence. Without the war on terrorism, there is no legitimacy for bombing Syria and Iraq. Okay, we have to go after the bad guys, the bad dudes, ISIS, and so on. In fact, everybody knows that Al-Qaeda and ISIS, people who have studied it, know that those entities are supported covertly by the United States and its allies, finance, and so on and so forth, by Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and so on. But that does not necessarily trickle down to the broader public. And then some people say, well, the broader public is ignorant. The broader public is not ignorant. It's the media which is, and the system which instills that ignorance. It's an engineered process of manipulation of public opinion. There are two things that we need to implement, and urgently. One is to inform the public, the broader public. But two, to question the legitimacy of this criminal undertaking. It's a collusive attempt to commit crimes against humanity on a mass scale.
Of course, the crackdown on the online independent media and citizen journalism is not limited to the UK. Governments around the world are enacting laws and empowering their own intelligence services to surveil and control their own populations, curtailing the ability of independent media to counter the mainstream propaganda.
The next voice you'll hear in this audio clip is that of Abby Martin.
Just this past weekend, it was revealed that in 2008, Australia's surveillance agency shared information about the country's citizens with its most trusted intelligence partners. Perhaps the most concerning part of this recently leaked Snowden document was the discussion between these allies over whether or not to share the medical, legal, and religious information of Australian citizens.
Breaking news overnight about just how much of our personal lives the government has been secretly surveilling. The Washington Post reporting a second massive intelligence operation, this one tapping into data of leading internet companies.
In one of the clearest and most disturbing signs that independent media is firmly in the crosshairs of the global elite, the war on information was one of the topics on the official agenda for this year's highly secretive Bilderberg Conference. This year's meeting of the Bilderberg Group brought together not only the usual gaggle of royalty, high-powered government officials, banking heads, and captains of industry from Europe and North America, but also a larger-than-average contingent of media executives and establishment-friendly journalists, including not only Bilderberg stalwarts like the editors of The Economist and Bloomberg LP, but Italian journalist Lily Gruber, Norwegian journalist Kjetil Alstadheim, and American journalist Amy Walter, as well as the editors of the London Evening Standard, Italy's La Stampa, and other mainstream publications. Ominously, joining this group behind closed doors were regular Bilderberg attendees Peter Thiel and Alex Karp of Palantir Technologies. Palantir is a shadowy data analytics firm founded in 2004 with the help of seed funding from InQtel, the venture capital arm of the CIA. Although the exact details of Palantir's relationship with the American intelligence services and their counterparts in the so-called Five Eyes countries of Australia, Canada, New Zealand, and the UK are not known, recently released documents have confirmed that the company's relationship with the UK's NSA equivalent, GCHQ, dates back to at least 2008, when they impressed intelligence officials with a demonstration of how their software could be used to track, trace, analyze, and de-anonymize internet traffic and online data on a mass scale. We now know that Palantir is a key part of the NSA's X-KeyScore program, which collects all manner of online data, not only emails, chats, and web browsing traffic, but also pictures, documents, voice calls, webcam photos, web searches, advertising analytics traffic, social media traffic, botnet traffic, logged keystrokes, computer network exploitation targeting, intercepted username and password pairs, file uploads to online services, Skype sessions, and more. Palantir helps intelligence agents map, trace, search, and organize this data in ways that make it impossible for people to pass information online without the government knowing about it. At Bilderberg, co-founders of Palantir were discussing the war on information behind closed doors with people like Sharon White, the chief executive of Ofcom, the communications regulator for the UK, and several of the reporters and editors who are charged with disseminating government-approved propaganda in the mainstream press. The implications of this are stunning, and they go far beyond a simple issue of public-private collusion around press censorship. At stake is not just the ability of the deep state to set the narrative of these terror events uncorrected by independent online reporters, but to define the very meaning of terrorism itself. If it turns out, as it did in the case of the Manchester bombing and the London attack, and the Westminster attack, and the Paris airport attack, and the Berlin Christmas attack, and literally dozens of other terrorist incidents, that the alleged attackers were all known wolves who had been identified by and often in contact with intelligence services before their alleged involvement in these plots, an independent online media might connect these dots to find a common underlying pattern, namely that these events are being aided by or at least passively allowed by these intelligence services, the same ones that have been caught time and time again, encouraging, funding, and even concocting terror plots in order to bust them just in time. However, if the deep state is in control of the apparatus for disseminating information online and censoring independent reporting, they can craft a very different story, one in which an overworked and underfunded intelligence system is straining under the burden of responding to all of these incidents, and only budget increases and even greater surveillance of the public can possibly reduce the threat from terror. If terrorist incidents are always tied back to shadowy groups linked to Al-Qaeda or ISIS, an online independent media might connect those dots to show how Al-Qaeda and ISIS were literally created, fostered, funded, trained, and equipped by the UK government, the US government, and their allies across the world as a tool in their quest of dominance of the Middle East and control of their domestic population. But such a story can only be told on a free and open internet, where independent voices continue to reach the masses and inform them of the truth about these terror groups. The truth, of course, is that the terrorists are the ones that are in charge of these organs of political, military, and financial power. The ones who are constantly terrorizing the public with these false flag events, and telling them that only greater governmental surveillance and censorship can protect them. To stop these terrorists is the prime political imperative of our time. And it can only happen through an independent media that is willing and able to counteract the official propaganda of events like the London attack and the Manchester bombing.
And next, you'll hear Professor Michelle Chosudovsky.
When the lie becomes the truth and critical analysis is suppressed, differences of opinion are suppressed, when facts are suppressed, then we are in an inquisitorial environment. It's not simply a police state. It's an environment where people don't think. They don't have an inner consciousness. And it is reminiscent of the witch hunts of the Spanish and French Inquisition, but it's much more sophisticated because it tells us anything that comes from high authority and which is then picked up by the New York Times and the Washington Post is the indelible truth. It goes into the news chains and every single local station will replicate it. And if anybody says, no, this doesn't sound right, they will automatically be put on a blacklist as a conspiracy theorist, a bit like the witches of the Middle Age in Spain. America's hegemonic project in the post 9/11 era is the globalization of war, whereby the US NATO military machine, coupled with covert intelligence operations, economic sanctions, and the thrust of regime change, is deployed in all major regions of the world. The threat of preemptive nuclear war is also used to blackmail countries into submission. This long war against humanity is carried out at the height of the most serious economic crisis in modern history. It is intimately related to a process of financial restructuring, which has resulted in the collapse of national economies and the impoverishment of large sectors of the world population. The ultimate objective is world conquest under the cloak of human rights and Western democracy.
And now we'll hear from the well-respected journalist John Pilger discussing the media. This edited clip is taken from the show The Sputnik with host Neil Clark. They're discussing the recent elections in the UK.
A lot has to do with the whole change in, particularly in young people's media habits, as it were. They're social media creatures now, most of them. Newspapers have made themselves, in many respects, defunct. They're not actually people. Newspapers as such, people actually quite like. They like the visceral idea of the newspaper. It's like books. It appeals right across the generations. But newspapers, playing this extraordinary propaganda card, have really destroyed their own power at election time in this country. It's quite wondrous to behold. Views dominate. That's the great reporter is not as celebrated as the great windbag. You take The Guardian, the whole stable of precocious windbags. Great reporting is quite different. Great reporting that draws conclusions, that seeks the truth through evidence and being the voice from the bottom, not from the top, being an agent of people, not an agent of power. That kind of idea of journalism, it exists in honorable exceptions in the so-called mainstream media, but that's really what we're missing, and that's why they got it so wrong. There were always gatekeepers, and the press was always conservative, and the press always represented vested interests. It pushed dissenting journalism, which is one definition of real journalism, because why have journalism at all if it is not going to dissent from the received wisdom, if it's not going to find out, if it's not going to push down facades and lift rocks and find out? That's journalism. It doesn't have to be aligned with any political party, but it does have to be a dissenter. So when you destroy that whole notion of journalism as a dissenter and make the media simply a foghorn for whatever establishment received wisdom is out there, that is not journalism as such. It's a form of propaganda. The creation of a second Cold War is a wonder to behold. It is such nonsense. Every bit about it is nonsense. In the United States, not as bad here, there's a kind of hysteria now. And this congressional committee that is hearing the likes of James Comey, the former head of America's political police, the FBI, as an objective witness. This is the FBI, which was run by J. Edgar Hoover all that time. He tried to smear everyone on Earth. There is no evidence, none whatsoever. Even the idea that Russia has interfered in the election. How did it change the election? What ballots were changed? How did it get into those boxes? What states didn't vote for the candidate that should have won because of Russian interference? The whole thing is nonsense. And yet you have newspapers, so-called newspapers of record, like the New York Times, saying, in effect, the Russians are coming. Comey himself said, which was reported widely across the U.S. in the last couple of days, they're coming to get America. I think I quote him exactly. I mean, in a so-called information age, which really is not so much an information age as a media age, to have this tsunami of propaganda about Russia and about the Russian president, the distortion of facts, the invasions that don't happen, are we living in a kind of a virtual fantasy world, in a sense, if you rely on the so-called mainstream media? But it's something I think most people now are really understanding. I think it's out. This election, in which the Mail devoted 13 pages of denigration of Jeremy Corbyn a few days before the election, were ignored. The Sun was ignored. And all the rest of the propaganda was ignored. I think people are onto it.
And next you'll hear from independent journalist Vanessa Beely, who has been on the ground in Syria multiple times. This edited clip also comes from the program The Sputnik with host Neil Clark.
It was extraordinary. It was an extraordinary time because being on the ground there, both in August during the heat of some of the battles to the south of the city of Aleppo by the Syrian army to regain ground that had been taken by the various extremist and militant factions, and then basically being in East Aleppo during the liberation of the various districts of East Aleppo, watching events unfold on the ground, speaking to people as they emerged from what was effectively a five-year occupation by Nusra Front-led, so Al-Qaeda-led and dominated extremist factions funded, of course, by our governments and the Gulf states and equipped by Turkey, etc., etc. And then to be witnessing events on the ground, to be witnessing the celebrations of the people at their liberation, to be seeing the care that the Syrian Arab Army and its Russian allies were taking to provide the humanitarian corridors to evacuate civilians from districts prior to going in and basically cleansing them of the various terrorist factions. And then to hear this almost sort of parallel dimension going on outside of Syria by our media, by the UN, by NATO-aligned NGOs, and as you said, by the government in Britain. It was quite extraordinary. There was one particular story that broke while I was there, which was the story of the Syrian women in a particular district about to commit mass suicide because the Syrian Arab Army were going to rape them, or that the Syrian Arab Army were attacking their own civilians. One, I was there and I was on the ground, and there was absolutely no evidence of this. There was sheer jubilation from the people of Syria to be liberated from this terrorist occupation. But also, something that people just don't seem to understand is that the Syrian Arab Army is the Syrian people. It comes from the Syrian families.
Yeah, and Sunni many and of Shia them, yeah, and different sects, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And many of them were coming back to their homes in East Aleppo. So this was one of the most obscene, grotesque distortions of truth that I've ever actually sort of been able to witness firsthand. I mean, and plus, you know, we're talking here a Muslim society. To even suggest that women in this society would en masse commit suicide shows a clear lack of understanding of that society itself. So, I mean, yeah, it was extraordinary. It was sort of completely twilight zone, to be honest. I mean, when you have a nation and its army and its state defending itself against an illegal intervention of proxy terrorist armies and brigades committing atrocities against human beings inside Syria, against civilians, not against the regime or against the army, not against military targets, but actually almost universally against civilians purely because collectively they've resisted this intervention. So it's collective punishment of the civilian population, which is ignored by the media. But when you have an army that is defending its country, that is recapturing its homeland from these terrorist proxies, it's described as Guernica or as Dresden, you know, and the media, and this is where it's criminal, they leave no space for any political or diplomatic dialogue. They amplify it to such an extent that there is no recourse except military action, military intervention. It's criminal. But then you see the US coalition dropping good bombs on Mosul.
Humanitarian bombs.
Yeah, humanitarian, you know, totally targeted bombs on Mosul. And of course, then civilians suddenly are described as collateral damage, whereas the US coalition in Mosul have not provided any humanitarian corridors. They've not provided any humanitarian assistance. And equally in Raqqa, we're seeing the use of chemical weapons, white phosphorus. But it's very important to mention that the US has also admitted to using depleted uranium throughout Syria, as it has in every nation that has been a prey nation that it's attacked.
Yugoslavia, for example.
Yeah, We've just had a report come out recently in the last couple of days. But they've used depleted uranium. They've admitted to using it. I have testimony from Syrian Arab Army soldiers on the ground of dreadful effects of depleted uranium bullets and grenades. And here we have the use of white phosphorus in Raqqa against a civilian population. Why? Because it's effectively aiding their proxy on the ground, the SDF, which consists, of course, of the Kurdish militants. And I have to make a very important point here that many Kurds in Syria support the Syrian state, support the Syrian army, and they don't want the Democratic Federation of Kurdistan. But these Kurdish militants that are being aided and abetted by the US coalition, and effectively what we're seeing is an ethnic cleansing of Raqqa. We have to be very clear of this. Over 50% of the population has been driven out over the last few months, but of course now in a more deliberate and intensified way by the US coalition bombing campaign. Not only white phosphorus, but intense bombing campaign. And, you know, we're hearing reports of 300 being killed, but we know how the UN manipulates figures to serve various geopolitical purposes, so we can assume that those figures are conservative. Perhaps because Syria is such a unified secular state, and basically 80% of that population, if not more, during this period of intervention, support the Syrian state and the Syrian army. I mean, let's be very clear, there's still opposition members and there are still opposition on the ground in Syria that do not necessarily approve of the government, but they're supporting the government in its resistance against imperialism, neocolonialism, and an attempt to both carve up Syria, destabilize Syria, and plunder Syria, as they've done in Libya and Iraq.
So the war against independent media is on. The deep state continues to spread its propaganda through the controlled media, misinforming you about, well, just about everything, except for maybe the weather. But I'd step outside and see for yourself before I'd even believe that. Since 9/11, you haven't been told the truth by the government and its controlled media about, well, 9/11 itself, most of the terrorist attacks, the global war on terror, Russia, Syria, and all of the other illegal wars, and the origins and support for Al-Qaeda and ISIS, the White Helmets, forced mass migration, and the list goes on. And speaking of forced migration, author J. Michael Springman has a new book out that challenges the official account of forced mass migration. It's called Goodbye Europe, Hello Chaos, Merkel's Migrant Bomb. Springman argues that forced migration is a subtle form of warfare waged by U.S. foreign policy with a double intent, to destabilize Middle East nations and to weaken Europe. And again, the book is called Goodbye Europe, Hello Chaos by J. Michael Springman. And I'd like to also recommend the book by Professor Michelle Chusadovsky, who you heard earlier on this show, and it's called The Globalization of War, America's Long War Against Humanity. And again, that's The Globalization of War, America's Long War Against Humanity. And their website is globalresearch.ca. And this concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.